welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I am one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, and joining me are two co-hosts who are also guest experts for the topic today, the survival of small-town newspapers. Paul Wearson, who narrated the Iowa Public Television program, The Seide Report, which was about four generations of Hugh Seide's family as newspaper editors and publishers in a small-town paper, and Tom Beal, journalism professor emeritus from ISU. Paul, could you tell us what's in store during the rest of our program?
Well, Susan, today we're especially fortunate to have with us in the studio Michael Crum, editor of the Ames Tribune, and on the line, Claudia Lovin, who has been publisher of the Boone News Reporter since the early 1980s. At the end of the program today, we'll be talking with Susan Vernon about the production of Plays Without Word. Now, Tom, as a member of the board of directors of KHOI, why don't you tell us what you saw on the front page of the Ames Tribune on Christmas morning?
Well, when I picked up my Tribune before breakfast, I opened it to a front page with the three-column-wide color picture substantive article by Gavin Aronson, one of my former students, with the headline, Local Radio Show Honored as Part of International Conference. Now, this article described the rather amazing award won by our weekly show, Donna Lana Kitchen, with Donna Prinz Gentis and Lana Noctegal. It really illustrates one of the reasons people are so loyal to their hometown papers. They cover the people and organizations we care about.
Just like we try to do at KHOI. When I was interviewing the editors of the Nevada Journal, Story City Herald, and Boone News Republican, and we'll hear the clips from those interviews later in the program, I kept thinking that they're living our motto, creating community through communication. And they have to make a living doing it. So that's what I hope you and Paul can explore with our guests without further ado.
Well, Mike, thanks for coming to
Appreciate
the station.
It. Good morning.
And I want to ask you, I guess, at the beginning, how did you become a journalist?
Honestly, I just kind of fell into it. I went to school to be in radio, and I worked for the first maybe 10 years of my professional career in radio, generally in small markets, places like Algona, Iowa, and Burlington, Iowa. And then there was some transition that took place within the broadcast industry at the time, and the opportunity was afforded to me to make the transition into print, where I worked at the Hawkeye newspaper in Burlington for 5 or 6 years. And then from there, things kind of grew, and I moved on to the Associated Press for a number of years before I came to the Ames Tribune 3 years ago.
That must have been a great experience.
Oh, it was an awesome experience.
And how to gather the news quickly and then write it quickly.
Oh, yeah. There's no time for dilly-dallying at the AP. I mean, you get it, you turn around, and it's on the wire. So it's a very quick turnaround. And it's an interesting experience to come from that level and those kind of demands to a smaller community newspaper where there's a perception that things can be more laid back. But in the world of digital news and things online, you really try to keep that level of immediacy at the forefront so that when you find out about news, you share it with the world online and through Twitter and through Facebook and the other forms of social media.
Yeah, the UPI. We were a UPI client at my radio station, and I was in the middle of a newscast when Kennedy was shot. And UPI had that story on the line in 3 minutes, and it came from Dallas. I'll never forget that. That was instant. They were in the motorcade, and they grabbed one of those primitive radio telephones of the day, and the AP guy couldn't wrestle it out of the hands of the UPI guy, so UPI beat the world.
Yep.
Well, now, UPI, I think, was noted for being the broadcast service. They wrote shorter, punchier stories. AP was more comprehensive, but it was really leaden when you tried to read it if you didn't rewrite it.
Right.
Well, now, Mike, how did you become editor of the Tribune? What was the process there?
The process, when I came to the Tribune approximately 3 years ago, I came here as a business and agricultural reporter because that was some of the background that I had at the AP. And about a year later, the position of city editor opened up, and they asked me if I'd be interested in that position, and of course I was. And that position really simply oversaw the newsroom and the reporters and the copy desk. about a year, a little over a year ago, I think right before I was here the last time, the opportunity came to move into the editor's position. And, of course, I said, sure, I'll be happy to do that too. No regrets. and so that's kind of how I became editor. It's just been kind of a progression of different steps and opportunities that I took advantage of.
Now, well, what are your responsibilities as an editor? We all knew Perry White on Superman, and he was under a lot of pressure all the time.
Well, I wouldn't quite compare myself to that. But from a lot of what I like to do for the job is because at the Ames Tribune, we have four reporters, all very good. I think all but one are ISU grads, which is good. But they still need a little coaching. They need training. They need experience. They need some guidance once in a while. And I really like the opportunity of sitting down and talking to them about story development, how to go about gathering the news. If one source isn't available, where else can you look? And working with them on that level. There's also some working with a copy desk and working on page design and story placement and working with a photographer on photos. We also deal with some budget issues. I also deal with the page design people every day, the people who place the ads to decide how big the paper is going to be, whether it's going to be an 8-page section or a 12-page section.
And we all take that for granted. We get the paper and say, this is normal, but look at all the work that goes into
it. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it really is. I think people would be surprised if they, you know, came in and sat and kind of followed whether it was me or anybody else, because we are a small staff. We all work very closely together. And it's not unusual at 3, 4, 5 in the afternoon for someone upstairs to say, hey, we've added a couple ads to this page, or we've killed a couple of ads. So that opens up more room for copy. And then we are left looking to either reduce stories, cut stories in size to make them fit, or come up with news to fill a space.
Now, Mike, do you write editorials also?
Periodically, I do, yes.
Well, that raises the question of editorial position. The Tribune is owned by a company that's headquartered, I think, in
Las Vegas, Nevada.
And so many times people ask when you have a local newspaper that's owned by a national company whether the editorial position is dictated from afar. How is the Tribune operated?
Every position that we take is generated within the Tribune. It is a position that is developed in discussion with myself, our publisher, Paul Heidbreder, and we'll even incorporate other staff sometimes just to get a feel for what the mood is and what people feel about a particular position. A lot of people think that when they pick up the editorial or when they read an editorial that that is the editor's position. That may be the case with some publications. I view it as having to be the position of the institution. It has to be the position of the Ames Tribune, not of Michael Crum. So when we sit down to write an editorial, it is very much a collaborative effort to make sure that it is well represented within the staff and within the leadership of the Tribune.
Michael, let me ask one quick question.
Sure.
May deviate from our original direction, but sometimes people criticize the media because they say it's biased, and they claim that the bias shows up in the news reporting itself. With editorials, that's where you can state what you think as the newspaper, but do you not still are you not still committed to the idea of, shall we call it, objective journalism, where the news stories do not promote a particular point of view, but rather report the facts?
Well, and you have to be. I think if you don't do that, if you don't remain committed to objective journalism and doing your best to report both sides and to report only the fact, you venture into the realm of tabloid journalism. And my background is, and I'm old enough to go back and know the difference, know the importance of it. I grew up with community journalism. That's what we believe in at the Ames Tribune. And whether it's something about an action the city council is taking and going out to find out, you know, what people who will be affected by that decision, what they think and what they feel, to something as simple, which I hate to say a lot of media outlets don't do, but if we report a significant arrest in the paper, we try to reach out to that person or their attorney so we can at least give them the opportunity to speak against, you know, the charge or the accusation, even early on in the process. So, I mean, you have to be. And if you don't, I kind of feel like you should just turn off the light and go home.
Exactly. But you also see in the Tribune nationally known syndicated editorials also.
Correct.
And you make
Correct.
Very good choices. I really enjoy the editorial page.
Well, and I'll tell you this. Tom, you talked about, you know, the bias in the media that people perceive. And unfortunately, it's usually perceived as being a liberal bias. When I became editor of the Tribune, I made sure to go ahead and look at our editorial page. And I think we were doing a good job before. But you can always do better. You can always introduce new voices, new positions, a wider array of opinions. And so that's really what I've tried to do. And we've gotten some positive feedback on it, so I appreciate it. But I think that's important because we try to be representative of the community. And not everyone in Ames feels a particular way on an issue. They may feel the complete opposite. And if they pick up the paper every day and only see the other side represented, then they're going to feel alienated. They're going to feel like it's not their newspaper anymore. And we probably lose a reader. And we don't want to do that.
But now we're into an era where there are a lot of changes in the newspaper business, as there are in so many realms of endeavor. And you might explain what's going on with local newspapers and how they were acquired, what your relationship is with them at the Ames Tribune.
And you're talking specifically about the other papers that
right,
Stevens
but...
owns. I've been with the company for 3 years, so I may not have the best history. Claudia with the Boone News Republican could probably share more about that. But here in central Iowa, Stevens Media owns the Ames Tribune, the Story City Herald, the Nevada Journal, Tri-County Times, the Perry Chief, the Dallas County News, and if I'm missing one. Maybe it's my own paper I'm missing. I don't know. But we own 6 or 7 papers, particularly here in Story County and even in Boone. We all work closely together. We all maintain our own identity. We all look different. We all maintain our own individual voices. But we work together in the form of content sharing. And if there's a story that one of us needs help on and we think someone at one of the other newspapers has the expertise or may have a connection to help us get information from their area that we need for the story, we'll reach out to them. And so there is a lot of content sharing that takes place because of reduced resources. We don't have 20 reporters sitting in the Ames Tribune newsroom anymore. So if something's going on in Nevada that Nevada is covering and we think it has a place in the Ames Tribune, we'll also use their story. And vice versa. Same with Boone, same with Story City. They'll use ours, we'll use theirs. So that's one way that we really work together kind of as a cohesive unit while all maintaining our own specific and very distinct identities.
So it's probably a good time to bring in your colleague, Claudia Levin. And she has her hands full, I guess, with quite a job. Claudia, you're on the line, are you not?
Yes, good morning, I am.
Well, we're delighted to be able to talk with you, and I guess we should ask you what we asked Mike. How did you become a journalist?
Well, first of all, just a slight correction. I started with the paper in the mid-'80s, but I've only been the publisher there for the last 11 years. I had a background in retail marketing and working in the retail section, and from there accepted a sales position at the Boone Shopping News. And that led to other promotions and changes in my position until I became the publisher.
How do you like being publisher?
It's great. It's challenging. It's a job that I just love. It's different every day.
Well, being in Boone, I suspect that you know a lot about the local railroad lore and all that is still being done there to promote the history of railroading in Iowa.
Yes, we are a rich heritage in that. I'm sure you've heard of our Pepper Belly days, that type of thing. And the history of the Boone News goes back to about the 1880s. So we kind of grew with the railroad in the community. So there's a real connection there.
Well, I think we were talking earlier about the advantages of a company that owns more than one publication at a time with limited resources. And you were with the Boone paper before Stevens Publishing bought the company. What changes have you seen? I was going to ask you, are you comfortable with those changes? But let's assume that you are.
When I started at the paper, it was family-owned. So there have been a lot of changes. And they have been things that have saved the small-town newspapers for the most part. And just like Mike said, you're able to combine resources. You don't have to have 3 reporters from different papers covering the same event. For instance, we're a small-town paper, and the Stevens Media also has its own digital company. We have national expertise that we would never have the resources to take advantage of if we were still just, you know, our own small town paper. So it helps us compete with the quality of product on a much higher plane. And also, as Mike said, it has allowed us to just be our own presentation, that we're owned by an outside newspaper does not dictate what's inside the pages of the paper. And that's very important to the community.
That's what I really like about this whole arrangement. As Mike pointed out, you all have your own autonomy, your own way to do your own business in your office, your own decision-making every day. But at the same time, you share resources, not only in terms of reportage, but also the mechanics of putting the paper out, printing, and all of these things.
Well, I think that's one of the things is we have meetings on a regular basis with managers at each of the publications, and we share ideas. We problem solve together. We talk about, hey, we encounter this issue. What are your ideas about how we can best resolve it? Or this is something that we've kind of stumbled upon. What do you think? So we have a lot of the sharing of ideas back and forth, which I think helps as well.
One of the challenges I think that the print media have been facing is a decline in circulation. Have your papers been able to meet that challenge with some success?
In fact, we have. I think in the past couple of years, and I think Claudia can speak to this as well, I think we've at least stop the decline here in Central Iowa with our little group of papers. And I think in some cases we've actually turned it around and we're beginning to see some growth in circulation, which is, you know, a big thing in today's world because there's the conception that print is dead, and obviously it's not. It's vibrant. It's alive. We're growing. I think we're doing well both in circulation and revenue. So I think people should, you know, maintain that faith in our local papers that we're strong and that we're going to be here for a long, long time.
Would you say the survival is indeed your focus on local that's keeping the papers
alive? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, what we do here at the Ames Tribune, and I think what all the papers within our little group here do, is we try to look at what can we offer our readers that they can't get anywhere else. And for the Ames Tribune, that's news here in Ames and Story County. For Claudia, it's what's happening in and around Boone. For Nevada, it's Nevada news. You can get news from Washington, D.C. You can get the latest world and international news any place 24/7. But there's only one place you can get news for Ames, and that's at the Ames Tribune.
Well said. Well said. Yes,
I was going to just say one more point here. I know we're running out of time on this segment, and that is how important newspapers are to a community identity and keeping the community as a vibrant unit. I think when a community loses its newspaper, then it loses so much. And Claudia, I wonder if you don't have the same feeling that you're serving the community. I don't want this to be sound like an advertisement, but I'm an old newspaper guy and I love newspapers. And I think they serve such an important function in providing unity to the community. Are you not feeling that as well, Claudia?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, the newspaper is the source for the community to find out what happened at the city council meeting, what's going on with the schools, everything that's important to the growth and lifeblood of the community. It's right there in the newspaper, and we reflect that, and that is what makes our readership strong and growing, as Mike stated, and it just brings the unity of the community together.
This sounds like the best of both worlds.
Well, and I think the other thing that we provide is we provide a voice, not only the voice of the reporters and the editors, but we provide a place for the community to have its voice on issues, on concerns that they have, which nobody else in Ames can offer. Nobody else in Iowa or the world can offer that spot for people in Ames and Story County, that if they're upset about a proposed pipeline, where else can they really express that? If they're upset about a tax hike, where else can they express that?
Yeah, I suspect the letters to the editor are one of the most widely read sections of the paper.
I would imagine, yeah.
Just a reminder, this is KHOI Radio. And we've been talking today with Mike Crum, editor of the Ames Tribune, and Claudia Lovin, publisher of the Boone News Republican. And we're talking about the issues facing those local papers in our Central Iowa area that are all owned by Stevens Media. To find out what this means to the papers closest to Ames, we've interviewed three editors. We'll take them in order of the length of time they've been in the newspaper business, starting with Todd Thorson of the Story City Herald, then Marlis Barker of the Nevada Journal, finally, Whitney Sager of the Boone News Republican. Now, after each interview, we'll give our guests a chance to comment if they wish.
We're sitting in the office of the Story City Herald with editor Todd Thorson.
Actually, I'm basically the only staff here other than our sales rep, but it keeps me hopping. You know, I do the layout and do all the writing that needs to be done, the sports writing and the old-time news. And so I've been doing this now since the mid-70s, So it's been in our family for a long time. Well, I started helping out in junior high in those years with my mom and dad when they bought the paper back in 72. And then my father passed away in 75, and I kind of stepped in to start doing the sports when I was in high school. But I remember helping my mom here in the office through the 70s and 80s, and the typewriters were going lickety-split up here in the front room. And, you know, we had a staff of six, seven, eight people, and it was a very busy time back then with the laying it out by hand and cutting and pasting. And and I saw the Verityper typesetting machine came in, and it's about the size of this desk here that was huge before the computer age. And then we just kept going and progressing to the Macs and the computers that came along. So I've seen it all change. And it's quite amazing how newspapers really got put together back in even the old days, the Linotype. My dad learned how to do the Linotype back in the 50s and worked for the Olsons. And then he started the local Reminder shopper and with my mom, and ended up having it in the basement of our house. So newspaper's been in my family and in my blood for all my life. So it's kind of I can't get rid of it, and I don't really want to get rid of it. It's something special.
When did you actually become publisher of the Story City Herald?
Well, I took over from my mom. She was the publisher after my dad passed in 75. She continued to run the paper until she retired. Oh, technically retired in the I think it was the 90s, late 90s. And I had a partner, Laura Urbanic, who is now working at she's the librarian over in Roland. She and I were partners when my mom first retired in the early 90s. And then I took over after she departed, and I became publisher-editor since then. We sold to Stevens Media 2 years ago. I love what I do, and we've got a little road ahead of us, but with Stevens Media approaching us to buy the paper 2 years ago, it had been a struggle to keep it going for 4 or 5 years. And with their resources and their larger corporation and staff and progressive situation, they wanted to see the paper continue. So did I. They do own the papers all in Story County, so it was a good fit for them. The Tribune has approached us for 40 years wanting to buy the paper over the years with different ownerships of the Tribune. So, and my mom was never ready to sell. So they've been a presence for a long time, and it was time. Financially, it was becoming very difficult. And with them stepping in and saving the day, so to speak, it was a win-win, and they retained me. So I was happy about that. I've enjoyed working. There's a lot of great people down there. Now we've been doing colors since they took over, and we've had a lot of good comments about that. We do our sports and pictures in color, and the front pages in color, and because I wasn't doing color up until they pretty much took over because it was expensive.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun talking with Todd. And I really know Todd very well because I live in Story City, and he really is that newspaper. And he was so happy, I can see, with the relationship he has, and almost everything that he has going on there has been enhanced by his relationship with the publishing company. And personally, I love reading the Herald because they have this looking back section. And I can see my relatives and people I knew back in the 50s, and you forget when things happened and what the sequence was until you see the looking back section. And here's my uncle in 1926 helping open the railroad to the snow from Roland and Story City. And, oh, that's when that happened, you know. So those are great features. And it really does enhance the paper to have color. And, of course, at the town of Story City 3000, the school is the center of life. And so all these wonderful pictures of the athletes and sports and music and all these things are present in the Herald. So I really endorse what Todd's doing, and I was so happy to hear that he feels good about this relationship and doesn't feel encumbered in any way.
Paul, you mentioned an important function of the newspaper, and that is to provide a record, a history of the community. It's daily history is what it is. And when the newspapers go away, that's lost because there's no one to gather that information. There's no place to record it and store it. and then maybe some years later retrieve it for a new generation to find out what it was like to live there.
And we'd hate to see a council meeting where the only people there are the council. That's what the newspaper does, too.
Well, the newspaper represents the community. It represents the people. Maybe yeah, they won't right. go down there on a cold night, but a reporter will and find out what happened, what our public officials are doing.
Yeah, true. Now we have Marlis Barker.
We're speaking with Marlis Barker, the editor of the Nevada, Iowa Journal. How long have you been editor, Marlis?
I started here in February of 1991, and then I left for a short spell from 1994 to 1995, and then came back in the summer of 95, and have been here ever since.
So you've seen quite a few changes in those years, haven't you?
Yes. Biggest change probably over the years have been in technology, of course, and in staffing, and in the composition of the papers that we have here in this office. Because when I first came here, it was just the Nevada Journal in this office. We put together only the Nevada Journal. And we had our own graphic artist, our own sales reps. You know, we had a full staff here of about maybe 8 people, including a general manager. And now we are more closely connected and tied together in a lot of those resources with the Ames Tribune. So in other words, we don't handle circulation here. They handle our circulation. Our outside sales reps are all out of the Ames office. We're not unlike a lot of companies where we have fewer people doing a lot more things. And we tend to now share a lot of things with our other papers that are in our company.
Having worked autonomously before, do you find this stimulating, challenging?
Oh, yes. I really love our connection with especially the Ames Tribune. That's our main connection because they're kind of what we would call our mother paper, so to speak. If I have something come up here that I question or need advice about, I can call and talk to my publisher in Ames or the editor in Ames. And there's a lot of really good teamwork that goes into some of the decisions that we have to make. And so I really like having someone to talk to when I'm questioning, should we be going down this path with a certain story or a certain issue? It's nice to be able to have that feedback from someone else. So, yeah, I really like the partnership. We also do a lot of news sharing. So if they know that I'm working on a story that might be of a broader interest to their readership, they'll call and we'll share the story. Likewise, if I see that they're going to be over here covering something, there's no reason for me to go and double cover something that they're going to be here doing, so we'll share. So in those ways, it makes a lot of sense, and it helps all of us a lot. And we do a lot of that with sports as well.
Right.
Sports is a big sharing thing among all our papers. We have Ames Tribune. Then in this office, we have Tri-County Times and the Nevada Journal, and we also put out another small paper for the North Polk school area called the North Polk Sun. And then we're also affiliated with the Boone newspapers and Dallas County newspapers and the Story City paper and Jefferson and Perry papers. So we have a lot of, in sports, there is a lot of really good sharing opportunities with sports events where a lot of those schools will play each other or be at the same event. It's helped us a lot there.
Well, now, I have a question. You said the other day that you had 3 papers that you had to lay out.
Yes.
And now, so...
The Nevada Journal is our, probably what would be our biggest newspaper coming out of this office, and it covers both Nevada and Colonesco schools, and that's most of our readership area in those 2 school districts. And then we also do the Tri-County Times, which was formerly in Slater, but is now put together here, and in that paper we presently cover Collins Maxwell and Ballard. We have at times covered North Polk in the Tri-County Times, and there's always discussion about whether or not, you know, we're going to cover them or leave them with their own paper. So that's kind of been an ongoing discussion. But right now we're putting most of the North Polk news into the Sun. And so Tri-County tends to be Southern Story County right now. And that paper is laid out and put together here with myself and my writers. And I have a writer that usually is on staff, but I use a lot of correspondent writers to put out these papers as well.
So are you the editor of the Tri-County Times?
Yes, mm-hmm. Oh. And of the North Polk Sun. I'm doing 3 newspapers right now. The nice thing about it is interesting because I get to meet a lot of people and work with a lot of different content. I love to do layout. I tell people when you lay out a newspaper, it's like putting a puzzle together, and the pieces are different every week.
I really like that. And, you know, I just had a great experience recently I had some storage space available at my farm for vehicles and campers. I called the Ames Tribune, found out I was going to be run in all these papers. I thought, wow, what great coverage. I'm just talking about advertising, you know. If you put an ad in the paper and you think you're doing only one, no, no, you're doing them all. That was really great. I ended that conversation thinking, this is wonderful. And now our next guest is going to be Whitney Sager. She's with the Boone News Republican.
I'm here with Whitney Sager, the editor of the Boone News Republican. How long have you been editor there?
I've been the editor there for almost a year. I started, I think, March 1st of last year.
But you were over at the Nevada Journal for a while.
I was over there about a year and a half before coming over to Boone.
How did you come to the Nevada Journal? What was your training before that and your background?
Well, I graduated from Iowa State in May of 2011, and I worked for about a year up in Eagle Grove at the paper up there. And my boyfriend was living in Ankeny at the time, and so we were traveling back and forth to see each other on the weekends. I grew up in Atlantic, so, you know, I was 3 hours away from home living up in Eagle Grove. So I wanted to get closer to my boyfriend and closer to my family. So I just kind of put out some feelers at various newspapers in the central Iowa area and seeing what would come up. And Marlis actually gave me a call, said there was a position open there, and so I went down and interviewed with her and was just totally in love with the paper and really got along with Marlis well, and so I decided to take that position down there.
And she said that you were very soon laying out the Tri-County Times.
Since they do the Nevada Journal and the Tri-County Times out of the Nevada office, or Marlis wanted to kind of split duties, and she would take over the journal and I would do the Tri-County paper. And I had never really done layout before other than just what I did in my college classes. So she kind of just gave me a couple pages at a time to work with, get more familiar with it. And I guess it kind of just came easy to me, fortunately, and I just kind of took over Tri-County.
It sounds like this was an ideal apprenticeship for being editor of the Boone News Republican.
Yeah, it was. You know, she trusted me enough to kind of give me free reign of Tri-County. And since I was living in Huxley, or I still live in Huxley, actually, you know, that was in Tri-County's coverage area. So I was down in this area anyway.
So what are the differences that you noticed between the Nevada Journal and the Boone News Republican?
Well, for one, the Nevada Journal and Tri-County Times are just once-a-week publications, and Boone, we publish three times a week. So we publish at the Boone paper Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. So that means Monday, Wednesday, and Friday are layout days. So it's a little different than when I was working in Nevada, you know, where I'd have kind of a week to go over stories and write stories and get ready for the next paper's layout versus in Boone, where I lay out the paper one day, the next day I spend getting ready for the next paper, and then it's, you know, layout day again. That took some getting used to, but I've kind of fallen into a rhythm now that I feel pretty comfortable with.
Well, we're really proud of Whitney. She is a graduate of Iowa State's journalism program, and while I didn't have her in class that I know of, I'd like to think that in a small way I may have helped it prepare her for her good job. Well, Marlis did a nice job of describing the significance of what small-town newspapers are doing, and so let's hear Marlis talk about that.
We are putting out the stories. We're working on the stories that you're not going to find anywhere else. And even if you're on Facebook, which I'm on Facebook, and we get a lot of feedback on Facebook, but there's great ideas and there's great little snippets of things on there. But we're going out and doing the stories that, I mean, if you really want to know what happened at the local city council meeting or school board meeting, or you really want to read more in depth about some of the history of Nevada or the things that come up here that are going on, we're doing stories that you're not, no one else is going to write those stories, really. And that's what makes us special. We're going to go out there and get those stories, and you know the people, and you know the history of it, and you know you're connected to it. So I think
especially with sports. The small town papers, sports is a little different than even in like the Tribune. In a small town, we focus on every single sporting event that goes on at the high school level. And so it's a lot of it is about names and games. And the people here get to have a rundown of every single game these kids play. And who was the high scorer, and who did this, and who did that. People love those things when they can see names in the paper, and they know the people, and they connect to that. I really think small-town papers who continue to be connected to their communities, we don't have to get every story out there first. We're not going to beat Facebook and some of these other things with every little thing that happens. But we need to be the ones who can get a broader version of the story out there and make it entertaining or newsworthy so that people know that they can turn to us for accurate stories as well. Because not everything that you read online is going to be right. And we are still held to those higher standards of having to print news that is accurate, fair, and that is researched. We can't just put anything out there unless, of course, it's an opinion piece. So I think that there's a big difference. People can turn to us and know they're getting an accurate story, whether it's a feature story or a news story. And if we make a mistake, we're certainly going to print a correction. You don't always see that in all these online sources. So I think that's a huge thing that's in our favor. And when I go out to the schools and speak to kids, I always describe to them that the small town newspaper is really an ongoing history book of these communities and places. Because you can go back in our archives, or you can go back just last year. It's what happened in this community. It was the stories that people wanted to read. It was the things that were going on at the school, at the city. So we are really continuing to produce an ongoing history of our communities. That's how I could describe it to the kids.
Good thing she said there was that when you print it, you'd better be able to back it up, and if you don't, you're going to hear about it. It's not as transitory as, say, the web, which even though we now know that virtually everything on the web is stored somewhere, it's not always checked by the...
Well, and the thing is I talked about earlier my career with the Associated Press, and there everything goes on the wire. If you make a mistake, you can fix it, and no one will see the previous version. That doesn't happen in print. When you pick up that paper every day, if I misspell your name, it's misspelled there forever. We can go ahead and we can fix it online. We can fix it on Facebook. We can fix it on Twitter. But when you pick up the physical paper and go to page 3A and you see that we misspelled your name, it's there. And the thing about community newspapers and a lot of it is just about names. I'll tell you a story that when I worked at a radio station up in Algona, some odd number of years ago, I had a general manager, old-time radio guy, didn't believe in music at all. The only thing we could offer our listeners was local news. And he said, our readers would be just as happy if we just sat down and read the phone book every day, as if, you know, just as much as if we go out to the city council meeting. He said, because people want to hear their name. They want to hear their son's name. They want to hear their granddaughter's name. They want to hear, you know, that their daughter had a baby at the local hospital, which we don't do that anymore for HIPAA reasons. But we get a lot of people still calling about how come we don't do birth announcements anymore or hospital admissions and dismissals and that kind of news. And there's legal reasons why we don't. But the issue about community journalism, lots of names, there is something about that. And earlier you talked about the identity of a community to its newspaper. I liken it frequently when I talk to people about this issue to a school district and a post office. You know, in Iowa here for the past 25 or 30 years, we've seen a lot of school consolidation, which has been really controversial because small towns have felt like they've lost their identity when their school is consolidated and maybe they lose the actual physical school in their community. And same with the post office. You know, there's been post office closings. And I think that if communities would lose their newspaper, they probably have that same sense of loss, like we've lost something of ourselves and we've lost some of our identity. So I think it's really important for communities. And I'm not saying this is a pitch for people to, like, subscribe more to their paper, but I wish they would. You know, it's important for communities to support their newspaper because we need that support, whether it's in subscriptions, whether it's in online subscriptions, whether it's in calling us to say they really liked something or they really didn't like something, or in writing letters to the editor.
And, or running a classified ad.
Or running a classified ad. I mean, we need that collaboration with our audience to be successful.
Well, Tom and Susan, hasn't this been fun today?
Absolutely.
Talking about the newspapers, and we've really enjoyed having you here, Mike.
Appreciate it.
Really.
Thank you.
Really enlightened me. And the message I get here is consolidation has occurred to some degree in the print media locally, but no one's lost their identity.
Well, we want to thank Todd Thorson, Marlis Barker, and Whitney Sager for being with us as well. Thank you very much. And Claudia, we're delighted that you were willing to be with us as well.
Thank you.
Well, that's kind of a wrap-up of local journalism for now. But, you know, when we talked about this, Susan and Paul, we both felt there's so much more to this story. One of them, for example, how technology has changed. Those of us who've been in journalism a long time remember when newspapers used to be printed with metal type, and you put ink on the type and pressed a sheet of paper against it and so on. Well, so that's another story for another day, but we do really thank you for taking time to come over. You're a busy guy.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm always happy to come over and talk about newspaper or anything else you folks want to talk about.
Thank you, Mike.
From a newspaper figure of another era, Little Jimmy Brown Newsboy, sung by the Carter Family. That's our transition.
Well, the morning paper, sir, my name is Jimmy Brown. Most everybody knows I am the newsboy of the town. My clothes are worn and thin. I wander about from place to place. My daily bread I win. But never mind, sir, how I look. Don't swear at me or frown. I sell them on.
The production Play With Words, Where Secrets Lie, is a collaboration of Ames Children's Theater, Ames Public Library, and the Iowa State Center, and will be performed this weekend at Fisher Theater, 7:30 on Friday, 2 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday, and the writers and actors include students as young as fifth grade from towns both in and beyond Story County. Susan Vernon, the one adult who is acting in the plays, is on the line to tell us about it. Hi, Susan.
Well, so good we're connected. First, you're talking to us from the school where you teach. Where is that, and what grade do you teach?
I teach at North Polk High School, and I teach 11th and 12th grade English and speech.
Is it true that there's some 5th and 6th graders involved in this production?
Yes, my son is actually a fifth grader involved in this production. We have quite a few fifth graders involved.
Did you get involved through him because he was involved and then you came along?
I did. And you know, he and I were involved in the first Play With Words. This is actually the second time we've done this unique kind of show. And we did it 2 years ago, my son and I. And it was his desire to audition that kind of drew me there, and we loved it so much that we came back this time, and we drug one of my daughters along. So there are three of us from my family in this show.
Could you describe this project? It sounded very elaborate from what I read in the paper. And was there a big similarity with the process from the first time and the second time, or were there some significant differences?
There's a tremendous similarity in the process, but significant differences in what you will see on the stage. It really is, as a teacher and as a mom, I cannot think of anything I'd want to be involved in more. This process involves students, children from all over the area coming to the Ames Public Library over an extended period of time to work on their writing with some professional writers. And ultimately, they then select a piece for submission to be considered for performance. And the production team then chooses some that they think will translate well to the stage. And they start as stories and poems and all kinds of things. And then this time around, our director, Ben Schrag, sat down with each of the kids who had a piece selected and worked with them individually to adapt those pieces for performance. Then we actors become involved, and a lot of children and teens from the area, along with myself, will be translating the work of these brilliant young writers into performance on the stage. And so I just, as a teacher, I love it because we're always talking about giving students authentic audiences and purposes for their writing. And what more authentic purpose is there than to see your writing actually come to life on the stage?
The five writers whose work has been translated for the stage, and they're from all over the area, isn't that right?
That is true. We have a lot of students from the Ames area this time around in our writer pool. We do have a student from Gilbert who did some of the writing. Our actors and singers and dancers this time around have a little bit farther reach. We have students from Roland Story. We have students from United this time, and then, of course, from virtually every school in the Ames area and Gilbert.
What is the theme of these plays? I noticed that the subtitle is Where Secrets Lie.
Yes. Last time we did not, I don't think we had a subtitle when we did this in 2013. This time, it just so happened that as they were selecting pieces for performance, this common theme appeared in every piece of writing they were looking at, this idea of a secret, some secret that needed to be kept, or some secret that gets revealed as a part of the story. And so they decided that would be a really neat thread to kind of bond all of these pieces together. And so that is the commonality among all of these works. Now, they are very diverse works. You'll see poetry performed in choral readings. You'll see a radio play and several short skits and even some dances and some songs. And so each piece is very unique, but they have this common thread that runs through them that really makes it a very cohesive play.
And how did the students submit their writing?
Well, they had worked. It was about a year and a half ago. The call went out just all over the area. I know, I think as a teacher at North Polk, I even got a little email asking me to suggest to students that they be a part of this. So it was we reached very far as we could, to draw kids in. And then they were invited to Ames Public Library, where they worked for, you know, a good year, going in twice a month to work with these writers to develop their pieces, and then they submitted them. The production team looked at the pieces and chose pieces that they were all wonderful, but they chose pieces they thought would translate well on the stage. And once those pieces were selected, that's when the kids began to work with the director to adapt the pieces to the stage.
Well, what are some of the most special things that you want people to know about these plays so that they might want to come and see them this weekend?
What I love about this production is that it is unlike any production you will ever see. How often can you go to the theater and know no one has ever seen this before and no one will ever see this again? It is truly unique. And I think what you will find if you come to this is that you're going to have your mind blown by how creative, how brilliant the youth in this area are. To sit in the theater and enjoy, thoroughly enjoy, a radio play that was written by a 12 or 15-year-old, or listen to a song that a middle school student wrote and get goosebumps as you hear it. it really is mind-blowing. For me, it has been even more so, because I was dazzled the first time around. Are you still there? I'm sorry.
Oh, yes. I'm listening.
Okay. I was dazzled the first time around, and then this time I'm seeing more unique pieces, and to just think how brilliant the young people in this area are, and then to have all of these young actors come in with talents like you would not believe. We have actors and singers and dancers of phenomenal talent, and they're 10 and 12 and 14 years old, and they are going to make the writing of their peers come to life. It is really, really a special thing, and it is a beautiful thing to see creativity like that nurtured in our children. But it's more than that, because you yourself as an audience member, you're not going to feel like you are watching something a 10-year-old wrote. And you are not going to feel like you're going to, you know, to some amateur student performance. This has a very professional feel to it. And start to finish, this has been child created. That is just a phenomenal thing. It's great for families. It's great for adults. It is just truly unique and special in the way it nurtures kids, but also just in the quality of the performance. And you're going to see such a variety of things. There's a radio play. There's a song. There's a dance. There's several little skits. There's a piece I'm in that has a little bit of Eastern inspiration that I think is going to really surprise people. And you can't see it anywhere else.
Well, thank you. That's a beautiful description of why we very well want to put it on our calendars. Play with Words, Where the Secrets Lie, will be this weekend at Fisher Theater in Ames, 7:30 Friday, January 16th, 2 p.m. on Saturday, January 17th, and on Sunday, January 18th. Thank you, Susan Vernon, for...
Oh.
Our only community calendar item this Friday is January 16th at 8 p.m. The very funny Tom Bedore will appear at the Talent Factory in Nevada, and he's a regular contributor to the nationally syndicated Bob and Tom radio show.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and today we've been talking with Michael Crum, the editor of the Ames Tribune, Claudia Vernon, publisher of the Boone News Republican, Todd Thorson, editor of the Story City Herald, Marlis Barker, editor of the Nevada Journal, Whitney Sager, editor of the Boone News Republican, and Susan Vernon told us about the upcoming Play with Words, Where the Secrets Are.
Your hosts today have been Paul Wearson and Tom Beal, with production assistance from Susan Franson.
Local Talk is engineered by Rebecca Brown.
Well, music you've heard included Little Jimmy Brown Newsboy, played by the Carter Family from the album The Essential Carter Family.
You can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. And now that's khoifm.org, where you'll find an archive for all the Local Talk shows we've produced since we went on the air in 2012. It's all on our website. Recent shows will be posted on our home page as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, can get the information. There you'll find all lists of our guests and links to the organizations and other resources mentioned on our shows.
If you've enjoyed this show, tell your friends and consider becoming one of the 500 families donating $20 a month or $250 a year to help us meet our operating expenses, though we'd appreciate whatever fits in your budget. We'd also like to hear your feedback, either by phone at 515-292-2878 or by email at khoiradio@gmail.com. with news in the subject line. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you'd like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878 or at the email khoiradio@gmail.com. Your participation as audience is what makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.